My name is Bridget Whelan, and I'm a research scientist at the University of Washington School of Medicine.
So what inspired you to create a study about student athletes and mental health and suicide?
So myself and my colleagues who wrote this paper are all working in the sports medicine space. So we work predominantly with athletes and then other members of the public with sport injury. And we had just really noticed that a lot of stories about athlete suicide had been in the media over the last 2 years. And we're wondering if it was truly a rise in incidence of suicide, or if maybe just the media had been covering these stories more. And so we took advantage of the fact that we had access to a database through the NCAA and a couple of others that tracks deaths of NCAA athletes to really look at this issue to see if it was. And unfortunately, what we found was that it is actually rising.
Yeah, can you tell me about the study?
Sure. So the databases that we used, there was four separate ones, and they are tracking all deaths from the NCAA athletes. So the athletes have to be actively on a roster at the time of their death. And as I said, it captures all deaths. And so we isolated out the ones that were marked as suicide. And then we also went a bit of a deeper dive in and looked at any of those that were labeled as unknown cause of death, because we wanted to see if, you know, we could really solidify the numbers that were in that database. And so we're able to find a few more, unfortunately. And so with this, we did an analysis. We looked at differences between gender and sport, day of the week and months of the year, and found that the rate has been rising. I should start by saying that the study looked at data over 20 years from 2002 to 2022. So we found that it has been rising over this entire time, which is very similar to the public rate. I guess it wasn't too surprising that it was, because we're seeing this in other populations. But the things that stood out to us were that it doubled between the first 10 years of the study and the second 10 years, and that also that there were some differences. And while none of them were statistically significant, there were still, you know, noticeable changes or differences between different sports and between men and women. And then we did find some differences between days of the week and months of the year that these were happening.
Like days of the week, what were some of the things you found?
Some of the things that we found were not statistically significant. And I always have to preface that, you know, by saying, because there is a lot of, you know, of validity that goes into this with statistical significance. But we did find that there was a difference between, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays and the rest of the days of the week. And then we found that the rate of suicide was lower in the summer months. And so there's a lot of things to speculate about. Our study did not have any information as to why any of these things were happening or the circumstances surrounding the individual. So we can't say, you know, why we think this was happening, but, you know, it can maybe be assumed that in summer months there's less pressure. They may be taking, you know, some time away from their sport or spending more time with friends and family without the pressures of school. But again, those are all just, you know, just conjecture.
What are some of the resources out there to help families of someone showing signs of suicidal ideation?
Sure. So first of all, for individuals who maybe considering this, the suicide hotline 988 is a great resource. It's anonymous. You can call or text, and you can speak to people who are there actively wanting to help and can provide resources. So that's a great thing for the individual. You know, friends and family also can access it. I think there are a lot of organizations out there doing really great work in this space. The one that we here at the University of Washington are using is an organization called Forefront, and they do trainings on how to, how to identify red flags and warning signs, and then how to approach the individual that they may be concerned about, and then also how to connect them to resources if the individual decides that they want to pursue something. And so it's a great way to really learn about some more of the warning signs. It's a hard conversation to have, surely, if you do think that somebody is considering this, but there's research that shows that asking somebody the question of whether or not they've thought about this doesn't then put the thought in their head. So if they were really truly, thinking about doing it, that thought had already been there, and they may be moving along that path. And so asking that question isn't going to all of a sudden make somebody think about committing suicide or dying by suicide. And so I think, starting to figure out how to talk to somebody, how to ask some of these questions, a lot of that is provided in the Forefront training. And I can send you a link to this if you want to add it to your resources as well. And then honestly, there's so much that is just, we need to really destigmatize talking about mental health and talking about death by suicide. The more we can normalize these conversations, the more comfortable people will feel maybe sharing that they're struggling with some of these issues. And hopefully we can prevent as many as we can.
What was it like for you working on this study with your colleagues?
It was hard. I'll be honest. It's, you can get into the nitty gritty details of, doing the analysis and, working through all the mathematical side of it. And then writing the paper, you're always trying to, you're all in an academic paper, you're comparing your paper to other papers and trying to, figure out, what's novel about yours versus others. And so you can kind of get involved in that process. But then as I was doing that, I just kept reminding myself, like, these statistics were individuals. Like, each one of these numbers was a person. And death by suicide is a death that can be prevented. Not saying that, those who have died by suicide, that anybody around them was at fault for not preventing it. I just mean that it's, like a cardiac arrest is something that, biologically happens and you don't necessarily know that it's going to. Whereas suicide is something, that one has to do to themselves. And so I think thinking about that throughout this whole process was really, really sad and really hard, because it's very traumatic thinking about all of those, not just the numbers in this paper, but all of the people surrounding them that have been affected, and how triggering this paper might have been for them is definitely very hard. But also, it's important for this information to be out there. It's important for other researchers and other organizations and individuals to know that this is a problem and this is something that needs help. And these are individuals that need help. This is a population that is often thought of as, being healthier or more supported or, more protected from some of these things. And a lot of what this paper is saying is that they are just as likely to have this issue. And so we just want to make sure that they're not being overlooked, they're not being forgotten about. And then also just to really to normalize it. I think a lot of these athletes are known in their community. Some of them become celebrities. Some of them, are there, they're a face of a university in some places, and they get a lot more attention. And so if we can be talking about this for people that are, in the limelight a bit more, maybe we can normalize it and encourage others to be able to see, like, okay, there are people, that are also dealing with this on a bigger stage, and I can also get help.
Well, I found out about the study on Morgan's Message Facebook page, which they do so much for student athletes and mental health. And they were praising the article. What has the early feedback been about the study?
It's been very positive. You know, I've had some people reach out that work in the mental health space, and both mental health practitioners, but then also researchers who have said, thank you. You know, thank you for doing this. This really gives us something that we can refer to, and we can now advocate, you know, to get help and resources, and really show that this is an issue, and these are the numbers that we have out there. And so it has been really nice to get that positive feedback. On the other hand, it comes with a grain of salt, because I know that it just means that there's that more, you know, many more people that are working in it, but that means, because it is a, you know, something that is affecting so many people. And so it really has been I've been very touched and very proud that this has been able to get out and get the message across and sort of get the support that it has, because I think it really is a good foundation to be able to help others with their work.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
I spend a lot of time with my dogs. that's my great mental health, support system. I'm very fortunate. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and so I'm surrounded by beautiful landscape, and so I try to get out and go for walks and hikes as often as I can. I reach out to friends and family, and I try to participate in some artistic things whenever I have the time and the motivation to get out my supplies. A few different things depending on the need and the mood.
You talked about it a little earlier about the stigma, but have you seen the stigma of just talking about mental health lessening?
I would say yes. I would say that it does seem to be something that people can talk about without as much, not concern, but, worry that somebody might judge them for either sharing some of their own struggles or, you know, asking questions about it. So I have seen what seems like to be a normalizing of it, but there's also lots of places where it's not a topic that people are either comfortable talking about or comfortable hearing about. And if you're not comfortable hearing about it, you know, it's going to be hard to have those conversations and be able to initiate this change that is needed to start to connect people to resources. So I hope that this continues. I hope that the trends that we see and people being able to talk about these things and be able to get resources out. I hope that this is something that continues. Certainly the pandemic has been helpful in that cause, and that, you know, we have the ability to share more. We can, you know, you and I are meeting right now over video, which is great, right? Because we may not have ever crossed paths in person. And so being able to have, you know, things like this where we can more widely share our findings and our motivations and all of the work, I hope just continues to propel mental health into a space where we can identify it the same as physical health, and we can really start to help people who need it.
And you're at University of Washington, which has been very successful with athletics, especially football this year. What are some of the things you like about collegiate sports?
I love the environment. I love, you know, it's very competitive, and there's a lot of structure to it. The athletes are very, very busy. They have a lot on their plates. But it's just a sense of camaraderie. You know, between teams and amongst teams, and it's a really fun place. You're surrounded by individuals who are incredibly motivated and incredibly talented, and just watching them succeed. And even when they don't succeed, you know, they have bad days, bad seasons, and but they keep coming back and they keep persevering and they keep really challenging themselves, and all the while are supporting each other and are able to kind of help each other when they're in funks or if their team isn't doing well. But then also knowing that they are at the same time college students, you know, they are still going to class, they still have homework, they still have to study, you know, for finals week, just like everybody else. And I'm, you know, thinking back to when I was a college student, that on top of, you know, the additional stress or you know, time that a sport takes, it's really amazing to watch them be successful. And then in addition to that, I'm just a huge sports fan, so I really enjoy being able to be around you know, athletes and be able to watch practices and go to games and actually get to know these individuals. I think it's been really rewarding for me as a researcher to be able to interact with the population that I'm studying, because it really helps me understand a bit more about what's going on. You know, like I said earlier about when I was writing this paper, you can get very caught up in the numbers and the trends and the statistics behind it. But being able to have this position where I actually get to interact and see these things has really just made me more passionate about the work that I'm doing, but also, you know, it gives a different perspective to the approach that I take to my work and to how I want to present my findings, because I'm really thinking about the fact that these are people, and, you know, most of them are de-identified and you can't figure out who is who in these articles. But they're still all individuals. They're all people. And so to kind of be surrounded by these individuals and in this environment is I feel very lucky.